You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together.
Hey guys, this is Kevin Kahn with Boston Strongcast. I'm going to do a little solo one here today, as I've been asked this question a few times in the last couple of weeks, and I think it would make a good podcast topic, especially since we have a lot of coaches that listen to the podcast, and I have this weird little niche amongst like physical therapy students, and I think a lot of them are younger, and it probably goes with my ties with Zach and Steph and Level Up and Mike Amato, and it seems like that population tends to be a little more into the things that I'm saying. So I think that this topic, it can shed some light on how a career kind of flows. So I'd been asked, this was the exact question, is what made me change from doing things the way I did them before, so the Chico style, more data driven, into the way that I'm doing things now. And even up till last night, even Zach and Ryan, who do the coaches' corners with me, made a comment like, hey, remember when everything was in the comp stance? And in the giant scheme of things, it wasn't even that long ago that those things were part of the program. So I've mentioned this a few times. I kind of fell into powerlifting. It's not a sport I grew up with. It wasn't like this dream job that when I went to school in this field that this is what I was looking to do. Like, I wanted to be a powerlifting coach. And to be honest, about a little more than 4 years ago now, I didn't even really know what the sport was. Rewind to that point, I knew that the squat and the bench and the deadlift were part of powerlifting. I knew that the snatch and the clean and jerk were weightlifting. And that's about as far as it went. I was still doing the MMA thing at the time. I'd played soccer through college, so lifting weights was always just kind of a means to an end to try to get better at sports. And even in college, we only lifted 2 days a week, and we weren't squatting, benching, and deadlifting heavy. We'd use the trap bar occasionally. We'd hit some front squats occasionally. But mostly it was just like a lot of single leg dumbbell stuff, bodybuilding style type things. And when I was doing the MMA thing, I was doing that multiple days a week. And it's hard to try to lift heavy on top of, participating in a sport. And at the time, that I was doing the MMA stuff, I had a kid. My ability to make time in my schedule to do all these extra things just wasn't there. So I kind of did the same thing 2 to 3 days in the week. I'd go to the gym 30 to 40 minutes, just doing like a bunch of single leg stuff, bodybuilding type stuff. I still kept in like speed and agility stuff because I found that stuff to be fun. But I wasn't doing like a ton. I started working at a gym that, had a big powerlifting community. So I occasionally started to lift. This was about 4 years ago. And then once the MMA stuff kind of fell apart, I decided that I was going to compete in a powerlifting competition. I like to compete. I thought it would be fun. And it just seems much more appealing than running a 5K or something. So I signed up for that and I started training. Now, I've always been one to have an open mind. And when I started down this powerlifting route, I wasn't, I had experience in this field, a lot of it. I got this program where my first day squatting ever was safety squat bar, low box squats with front facing bands. Now, I hadn't put a straight bar on my back to squat in years. So it seemed odd to me that this was the choice of exercise, but I kept an open mind and I was like, There's probably a lot about this sport that I don't know, so I'm just going to kind of roll with the punches. So it's always kind of been my mindset to have, you know, to be open-minded, to question things, to be skeptical. A few weeks into this program, I realized that it was not working for me. I could squat more with the safety squat bar at one point than I could with the straight bar on my back, and I knew that just wasn't right. And at the same time, I was fortunate enough that my path crossed with Boris Shako. So when our paths crossed, it was at a seminar and he's talking and I'm like, this just makes so much more sense to what I understand to be true. And if I'm going to get serious about this powerlifting thing and this is going to be my hobby moving forward, then I should probably hire him as a coach. Now, I was at the time, you know, I was getting a little banged up from the MMA stuff, even though I was just doing it for fun in the mornings, you know, 3-4 days a week with a few buddies. There was right before I stopped doing it, like they bought houses and had families and started to move away. And I wasn't looking to get like, I just wanted to go there and have fun. And when that was starting to break apart, I didn't want to do anything different. And I was also starting to suffer a few more injuries. A year before I had stopped, I had torn my bicep. A little bit before that, I had broken my tibia. And then right before I stopped, I was teaching at a school in Copley Square. So in the mornings, I would go and do my thing with my friends. Took a kid down. My head was under his armpit, and I did something that I've done literally tens of thousands of times without an issue. I would pull my head free. My ear got caught, and I got this huge rip between my ear and my skull. And, you know, I'm going to work bleeding on the orange line and, like, I don't know, these thoughts just that, like, man, I'm starting to get too old for this stuff. I was 32 years old at the time. And, you know, once they moved and stuff, my friends, I was like, you know what? I think I need to find a different hobby here. I think it's time to just, it is what it is. So knowing that I was going to do this powerlifting thing for a while, like I wanted to actually like make an effort and see what happens. So fortunate enough, Boris Shako came, he's speaking at the seminar and it really just resonated with me. This makes sense. So I had reached out to him. He helped me pre-plan a quick little 4-week thing before my competition, 5-week thing before my competition, because it wasn't a ton of time. And we started working together, and that was in October of 2014, I think. 2014, 2015, probably 2015, October of 2015. So my first competition was a little less than 4 years ago. So I started working with him right after that competition in October, and for the next 3 years. There was an intern at the gym I was working at the time that, you know, I needed somebody to train with, because now that I was doing a Shako thing, everybody's just telling me I'm going to get hurt. It's not for beginners. And I really didn't want to be a part of that training crew and listen to that the whole fucking time as they're doing, you know, 4-inch too high box squats, screaming, yelling, and blasting heavy metal music. It, you know, was just not necessarily what I was looking for. So the intern at the time, I was like, hey, you got to learn how to lift anyways. I want to fuck around with this stuff and just, I'm going to mimic it for a while, see how it goes, you know, and we'll take it from there. So for a year, I coached that intern, and I did all of this stuff for free in the beginning. So I coached that intern, and a few others I started coaching for free just to gain experience doing this stuff. So Kerry came in shortly after. So she was, you know, a little over a year into me doing this. My first meet too. So at the time, I think I weighed in and I had gained some weight before this meet. So I was like 170, 175 pounds. My very first squat, I got red lights in an RPS meet for depth. So if you know anything about RPS, they tend to be a little bit less strict when it comes to some of the rules. So in order for me to get red lights on a squat for depth there, it was pretty fucking high. And I think it was like 275 pounds. I went up anyways, like more than I would today. But, you know, all in all, I had enough fun at that competition. And, you know, as much as I shit on the RPS and stuff for not having strict standards and the equipment and whatnot, it was a great first experience for a competition. It was obviously good enough that allowed me to continue to compete and want to continue to coach. The intern that I was coaching at the time did extremely well in her first meet there. So that was good to see. I did another RPS meet like 6 months later. My total went up quite a bit. I think I squatted 315 at the first meet because I wanted to hit that three plate. So I was chasing some numbers there. At the second one, I ended up deadlifting over 500 pounds. I was still squatting way under 400, 365, 375, something like that. And that was in April. And the intern that I was coaching at the time got her, she squatted over 300 pounds in her first meet. In her second meet, I mean, and started to deadlift close to 400. I want to say it was like mid threes. So progress was happening for the both of us at the time, and I was starting to get a little bit more comfortable with the rules of the sport and everything. And obviously, you know, had been coached by Shaco for, you know, 7-8 months at the time. I was starting to learn a lot about the technique of the lifts and like how to break down the lifts into its certain components and exercise selection to fix those things. And these are just like general guidelines that he used. So based off of the Russian classification chart, which is basically gender, body weight, and total, there's a suggested number of lifts and average intensity for those lifters. So then you would take those lifters, so you have your basically your volumes planned out. And then from there, it'd be you'd analyze their lifts based off of the components that Shaco had laid out. So if something was wrong in this portion of the lift, here's the variation to use to try to fix that. The variations were always comp stance, comp grip, comp deadlift. We didn't vary outside of those. And ton of progress. Let's get back to what I was saying before. So like, there's my ability to ramble and go off in a million different directions. So Kerry came in a little over a year later, I think. I think I've told this story before, but for those of you that don't know, Kerry walks into my office. She's looking for a powerlifting coach. I'm like, you know, she's tight. So I was like, all right, what are your best lifts? Making conversation. She's like, squat 275, I think it was. And in my head, I remember like my bullshit meter just going ding, ding, ding. No fucking way. So I asked her to show me a video. And she bent her knees about 2 inches and stood back up. But there was 275 on her back. But then she showed me a deadlift video from a competition that she did. She's wearing lifters, legs are straight, back's round as fuck, but she pulled like 330 or something like that. And it's like, holy shit, that's a pretty decent pull, but it clearly, you know, needed some work. And Kerry is instrumental to this whole thing. She is basically the reason why we went from what we were doing before to where we are now. And so her story is extremely important. So the fact that her technique on her deadlift was so bad, I knew it would take some work. So there was a small powerlifting group at the gym that I want to say they met 3 days a week, and it was at like 6 p.m. or something. And Kerry's schedule just didn't allow her to meet at that time. Now, I wasn't like taking powerlifting clients at the time. I was basically training interns for free, just trying to learn how to do it. And I at the time I'm like, you know what? I've been doing this for over a year. I'm comfortable enough taking Kerry on into our group. So that's what we did. And I ran the numbers that Shaco had laid out, the number of lifts, the average intensities, the exercise selection, all of that stuff to a T. Now, you know, I'm pretty smart. I have an undergrad degree. I have a graduate degree in this field. I have over a decade of experience. I always got really good grades. Like, I'm pretty intelligent. So for me to be able to follow these simple directions, it's not a challenge. So there's no way I wasn't fucking this up. So I take her to her first meet, and I want to say she squatted 231 maybe, and it was borderline depth, and she got, I think, a gift with the 231, if I'm remembering right. And then her third was 236, or maybe she squatted even under 231. Her third was like 236, 241, and she got red lights for depth. And, you know, it's one of those, you watch her, and all of a sudden when it gets heavy, her actions before she lifts, like, there's definitely a lot of nerves there that she was dealing with. The bench just wasn't moving. I want to say it was the same as what she had benched before, and I feel that was a trend for quite a while. Maybe up until nationals, where it might have been a 2.5 kilogram PR, and it just kind of still like petered around for a while up until like recently. And then her deadlift was way less. So I told you how she had pulled that 330. I want to say her best in a competition was 336 at the time, and she pulled 308, and it was an RPE 10 at 308, and it might have been a second attempt. So, you know, there was the third attempt didn't even budge. So that was the first meet. And then 6 months later, she did regionals. And at regionals, things went a lot better. She squatted more. I want to say like 250-ish. The bench, I'm not sure if she hit a PR on the bench. And the deadlift, she hit 336. So she had matched her all-time best. Now, during this time period of training, this 6 months, I decided that, you know, once two plates are on the bar, you could just see Carrie's emotions change. So I was like, we need to handle two plates as much as humanly possible in the gym, or it's just not going to work. And in hindsight, this is the first time I started like actually looking at a lifter's emotions and allowing decisions to be made based off of that being the, because I'm like, you know what, her technique's fine, like everything's fine. It's just she gets too nervous, and I don't know how else to not make her nervous other than just doing it more often. So we started touching two plates on the squat way more frequently. So we were taking a lot of singles. And I remember one day she's doing pin squats. And we've been doing pin squats for a few weeks. And we get up to 225. She takes it down to the pins. Can't budge it off the pins. But like, I know, like watching it, she just didn't try. There wasn't like, in her head, she tried. It's not like she doesn't give effort. Like she, and it, I literally, so she crawls out from under the bar, and I'm like, Carrie, get back under that fucking bar and squat it up. You are more than capable of doing this. So it's sitting on the pins. She gets under it, gets under position, and gets it up in a squat and brings it back into the hooks. And I think that was a moment that she's not squatting as much as what she is today. So she hit 300 pounds on a pin squat a few weeks ago as a 52, which is a huge squat. She's not hitting those types of numbers if it wasn't for that moment in time. And that really like stuck with me. Like, because after she hit that, we started to see progress. And then after regionals in August, you know, 8 weeks later, she's at nationals and squatted 270. So all of a sudden, that squat went in February from around 230-ish, without looking back, I don't know the exact numbers, but around 230-ish to 270 pounds. And Carrie had to switch knee sleeves in the middle of the competition. After her opener, we had to go buy her knee sleeves, get her in them, and get her back on the platform before her number got called. So not only was she handling heavier weights, but she had to deal with a stressful situation, and it went extremely well. Nationals in Orlando was probably her best meet ever. I think she missed a third bench, but she ended up pulling an all-time PR in the deadlift of 342 that same meet. So, you know, with that said, her technique was still the same on the deadlift. And like I had said before, she had pulled 336. in the past, like before she had even started working with me, and at the point we've been working with each other for a year, it still really hasn't moved. Like maybe on a given day before she had met me, when she hit that 336, she could have hit that 342. It's too small of an increase to be patting ourselves on the back for what we've been doing in the gym. And like I said, bench wasn't going anywhere. So with the deadlift, I was constantly just, all right, well, she's pulling with a round back. So I was just really lightweight and trying to use the variations to really get her in those better positions, but it just wasn't working. And, you know, it started to make me literally question everything. Like, I didn't know what to do at the time. Like, all of a sudden, like, the squat's blowing up, which is allowing her total to constantly increase, which is nice, and it's continued to do that. Like, knock on wood, let's hopefully keep that rolling. But I, you know, I was kind of stuck in this, like, where do I go from here? Now, I was coaching Dave at the same time, too, leading up into Orlando Nationals, and when he had started with me, he had started 4 or 5 months after Kerry. Like, his squat had gone backwards at the start. So he had squatted 606 in Atlanta at Nationals. At his next meet, he hit 585. So here I am, I'm changing positions. And at the time, I thought I was doing the right thing, right? We'll take a step back to make 2 steps forward. But I'm not okay with doing that anymore. Like, in hindsight, what I would have done there is, we'll make sure your performance is increasing, and I'll just put you in positions that allow you to kind of choose a more efficient position in order to be able to lift heavier weights. But I didn't do that. I, you know, forced him to take a step back. So he hit 606 at Atlanta Regionals, I mean at Atlanta Nationals, and then at in Orlando, I think he hit 617. So it was a PR, and, you know, we're patting ourselves on the back, but in a year, he went from 606 to 617. And in the moment, I was like, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing there, but when I actually took a step back and started to actually, like, look at it, it's like, man, that's really, like, not a lot. And he benched a little bit more and deadlifted a little bit more. So he had a nice, you know, I think he went like 8 for 9 or something, because his second squat was high, but we still went up and it was fine. So, you know, and he had a decent total PR. I want to say it was around 10 kilos, you know, give or take. And, you know, same thing. Like, he had a similar issue as Kerry on the deadlift, but, you know, it kind of moved a little bit, not a ton. So, you know, when I really took a step back, I was more curious, like, all right, well, I can keep, and if you go back in the podcast, you will hear me say this so many times. All right, if we, you know, every 6 months put 2.5 to 5 kilos on each lift, like, at some point, we'll, you know, our totals will be huge. And yeah, it's all good and grand, but that 5 pounds, who's to say they couldn't have hit that before? So I wasn't too sure that that was literally the case. So I began to question a lot of things. And, you know, when I went back with Kerry's squat, I was like, man, it just seemed, once I allowed her to load it up a little bit, it helped her confidence and it's moved a lot. And so instead of being so strict, and at the same time, too, I'm starting to read John Kiley's work, which is saying, you know, pointing out some of the flaws in Western periodization, which I've mentioned a lot, and I'm not going to get into a ton here. But basically that the athlete and the coach need to, you know, be co-captains of the ship, so to speak, and that flexibility and adaptability within a program is extremely important. So I had seen on some of Detmar Wolf's templates that he had ranges for exercises. He called them intensity intervals or something. I forget what he called them, actually. It might have been intensity intervals, because I think I used the name from him, where he gave like a range of, you know, for certain high bar squats, like that, there would be a given percentage range for those. So So I thought for a minute, I'm like, all right, well, here's my chance to get the flexibility and adaptability into the program as I will give the lifters intensity intervals. So on a day it feels good, you get this sliding scale of percentages. And this is kind of what Shaco allowed me to do is I could go up, you know, 5%, no more than 10%, or down 5% or no more than 10%, very occasionally in training. But there were certain guidelines in which I could do those things. So I was like, all right, so let's add in the intensity interval. So, you know, and I did it in a way because I'm using the acute chronic work ratio at the time, and I need to make sure that these ratios stay in check, because if I don't, somebody's, you know, gonna somehow get hurt or something. So on a day that they went up, if they went up by a certain percentage, they had to take that weight off the bar later in the week. So it kept everything in balance, but it allowed them to have a heavier day. Progress moved. So they started to do a little bit better than they were doing before. We started to take more singles in training at the time too, because I started to feel that they were more appropriate. Now I'm using percentages at the time, so the singles would be like 90%, but with the intensity intervals, they're probably, you know, anywhere from 90 to 95% for a single. And again, we're seeing good progress. But I'm starting to see some flaws because of all the data I'm collecting. So I had these fancy Excel spreadsheets that were extremely well done. And I'm very grateful to the person that helped me do them. I literally wouldn't be here today without having these Excel spreadsheets, even though I don't use them anymore. So I'm tracking all this data, and it's like, all right, well, I'm repeating things. Making sure the acute chronic work ratio is there. I'm overloading volume. I'm upping average intensity. I don't understand why the results fluctuate so much. Like, there were times where you just didn't see any progress at all, or one block led to a 10-pound squat PR. The next time you ran the same block, it didn't do anything. They sometimes tested out at even lighter numbers. You know, and I would chalk it up to some type of fatigue, or their nutrition, or their sleep, or outside stress. Like, you can always find a reason why your data doesn't line up with expected results. And that's where I was kind of at. But I realized I'm doing this way more frequently than I want. And the more I read and the more I learned and the more I observed, the more I realized that, like, this is fucking chaos. There is these things, like, I don't understand, they matter, but then all of a sudden they don't. You know, what am I doing wrong? And at this current point in time, I'm starting to question variability in training. So, you know, I'm noticing that a lot of the USAPL lifters aren't using any, or if they are using some variation, it is extremely minimal. And it's just like paying attention to volumes and rep ranges and all of that stuff. But like, I almost went that route, but you know, I'm looking at my sheets and it's like, it's not the fucking volume. The volume is not the answer, because I'm tracking it all. And it, regardless of what they're doing, it doesn't fucking matter. It's not helping. And with Kerry, for her deadlift, I tried lifting heavy. I tried lifting lighter with more reps. I tried more volume. I've tried a number of things, but nothing has worked. And, you know, at the time, you know, let's try conventional. Oh, that doesn't look good and it's way weaker, so let's go back to sumo. So obviously, in hindsight, that's a weakness that we needed to bring up. And if you look at her sumo deadlift, she pulls it like a conventional, and she'd probably have greater leverage if she was pulling conventional. But that's something that my inexperience didn't allow me to pick up on earlier on. You know, now with these things, I have an open mind. Maybe Kerry at regionals is going to pull conventional. Maybe not. I don't know. We're going to just allow training to kind of form itself, and we'll see as we get closer. So I'm trying all of these things, and I'm just like, I don't fucking know. They don't seem to be working. Dave switched from conventional to sumo, and his deadlift started to blow up, but maybe it was just the novelty of an exercise. So I began to question myself and look into the literature for like variability and training and stuff. And obviously there's nothing for powerlifting, because nobody gives a shit about this sport. When it comes to the literature, there's very few things. But I stumble upon dynamic systems theory, and I'm like, oh, this is interesting. I'm reading it, and it just like reminded me. So like my first day doing the MMA stuff, I remember walking into the gym and being like, hey, I want to do this. I had a cup of mouthpiece and boxing gloves. And, you know, I get into this like 8x8 ring with somebody who had UFC fights and he just kicked the shit out of me. Like, there wasn't a ton of technique given at the time. It's kind of, you just learn to do it by doing it. And there was a lot of guidance along the way. So it sounds like, you know, I just get in there and they beat the shit out of me and I left. That wasn't the case at all. They gave me a ton of guidance. Like, hey, when this happens, you know, here's an idea. Here's some footwork drills to work on. Here's the thing, you know, based off of what they saw, you know, coming up in the rounds that we were doing and stuff like that. And that's kind of like how I developed a skill set within that sport. And for soccer, it was the same thing. You know, long-term athlete development. You're using smaller fields, smaller balls as a kid, because if you're using an adult-sized ball, it's going to change how you approach it and how you go to kick it. So in order to develop the skills that you're going to need, you know, as a late teenager in high school and college, changing those, what I now know as constraints, are extremely important to developing that skill set. So I'm reading this dynamic systems theory thing, and I'm like, this is how I learned how to be, how to develop a skill set within two separate sports. This makes so much sense to me. So I send it to Mike Amato. I'm like, hey, what do you know about this? And he sent me a bunch of resources and I read up about them. And when I'm reading it, I'm also thinking, you know, Shaco was always like technique first, technique first, technique first. And, you know, everything you read in the literature, effort is important. And I'm realizing that if we don't use heavier weights, we're not fixing technique, because everybody looks great at sub-maximal weights, but the second they get heavier, it requires a different skill set and a different mindset in order to execute. And those need to be trained in the gym as well. So I'm reading all this constraints-led approach stuff, and everything just clicks. It just makes sense to me right away. And, you know, always keeping an open mind and being skeptical, I'm like, you know what, I need to. So I ran it for about 6 months with my Excel spreadsheet. So I'd give them their percentages, their sets, and their reps, but it was basically like, I want you guys to take, we were doing the hard sets. So I want you guys to take 1 to 2 sets, RPE 8.5 to 9.5, regardless of what it says on the sheet. You know, if you feel like crap one day, just run the numbers. So I started to do that, and obviously it's really hard to track, but I was tracking with about 10 of them, just seeing, you know, acute chronic work ratio, volumes, all of that stuff, and seeing if there were any trends. And there weren't. There were zero trends. The acute chronic work ratio was all over the place. I was like, this is fucking garbage. It's got to go. Volumes, you couldn't find any trends in there either. But our totals were going up. People were starting to crush fucking weights in the gym. So I decided that I need to be better at coaching, because what we know that really works, all I know right now that's worked from the time that I made Kerry get back underneath those pins to lift that squat, is finding a variation that challenges the lifter's technique and lift it fucking heavy. That's all I know that works. Everything else, it's mere speculation and nothing more than this shared ontology that gets passed down from generation to generation without anybody ever fucking questioning it. And the second you question it, every fucking troll living in their mother's fucking basement on the computer watching too much porn needs to comment on an article telling me how stupid it sounds. Like, get a fucking life. And we need people to question these things. We will never progress further if we don't question these things. So all I know that works is if we put people in certain positions and we lift them fucking heavy, they seem to blow up their totals. And what I used to say before, that, oh, you know, 5 pounds on each lift every 6 months is fucking garbage. What I've started to notice is that one rep max, yeah, there's fluctuations in it during training, but there's small spikes and small valleys during that period of time. And then if you keep training hard, all of a sudden there's a big spike. It doesn't just incrementally increase, it explodes outwards. And I think what happens in a lot of cases, because people don't question these old beliefs that are based, literally based off of research in the 1930s done on fucking rats. And all you're doing is you're setting it up in a way, and there's enough belief where you're catching a small spike. So, or if you're unlucky, you catch a small valley, you just chalk it up to, hey, this is how things are. And yeah, those things are going to happen no matter what. But I think the typical way of doing things is just nothing more than small spikes and valleys, where if you question things, you observe, and you pay attention, there aren't those small spikes and valleys. That's not the final outcome. You can do way better than that. And that's what I started to realize. So I dumped the Excel spreadsheet because I didn't want it to affect my bias. So this thing had, you know, greens, yellows, reds, and all kinds of numbers on it, and it's impossible to ignore as a human being. So I didn't want it to even subconsciously affect my decision making. So I stopped writing sets because, like I said, I have, at the time, over 3 years of data on volumes that just show that there are no fucking trends to what works and what doesn't work. But we hold on to it because we like this blanket of security that, oh, well, I increase volume, so I'm doing my job right as a coach, so it must be your job as a lifter, because you're not eating right, you're too stressed, you're not sleeping, you're finding nothing more than fucking excuses for your inability to observe and question these older beliefs. So I threw out literally everything in those programs that I knew, because I collected so much data for 3 years, that didn't work. So they get reps for me, they get the exercise, and I give them a suggested top set. Now, the suggested top set helps me to kind of judge performance. And we track all of these things. So now, and then from there, I just sit back and watch, and we adjust as needed. I'm not saying that volume doesn't matter, but volume doesn't matter until it does or until it doesn't. So, maybe somebody's only squatting one day a week with me and they're seeing great progress and it stalls. All right, you know what? I'm going to give you a few more exposures of it. Let's add another squat day in there and let's see what happens. You know, or if somebody has, you know, a few issues to work on in the squat. All right, well, day one, let's work on this. Day two, let's work on this. Or if something's extremely glaring, like many of the PPS lifters listening to this know this all too well, you know, your knees are caving in a lot in the squat. You're getting nothing but wide stance squats, probably multiple times a week. You know, up to three. I've given people wide stance squats 3 days a week. It might be high bar wide stance, one day wide stance, pin squats, wide stance squats with chains, or wide stance low bar squats, whatever it is. Like, I've given that to people before because we have a period of time that we need to build up this weakness. You know, and so now my data set is my intuition and my relationship with the athlete. So we have a lot of conversations. On top of the conversations that we have, they write notes, and these notes give me information. So I don't know what works and what doesn't, other than 1 to 2 heavy sets in a position of inefficiency that punishes inefficiencies seems to work, right? And it may be as simple as this works because you're training in positions that just feel way fucking harder and pushing weights and building it up to the point of where you're touching numbers that you typically would touch comp squats if you were doing a higher volume program. And even then, they tend to be a little bit higher. Hitting 90% for a triple in a high bar wide stance squat is not fucking easy. So then the second you put that bar lower, you go into your comp stance, you're more comfortable, your squat numbers are blowing up, and it just may be because you're more comfortable. But all of these things of developing a skill set and treating strength like a skill is the only thing that makes sense to me, and it's probably wrong. Every hypothesis has been disproven at some point, but it's probably less wrong than the old belief of, you know, the sums of volumes and average intensities and all of these other factors. You add them up, you know, 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2 in those cases. Treating it as a skill treats the human as an open, complex system. It's nonlinear, it's dynamic, and it is unpredictable. And the fact that it lays out a framework that encompasses that is extremely important. You know, the second law of thermodynamics says that you're going to lose some energy into the fucking universe for reasons we don't know why. And I kind of view training that way. Like, you may do something now and it doesn't fucking work. Well, that's what it's like being an open, complex system. But at the same time, you can use that same effect with a group, because that energy can be shared. PRs are contagious. And this is a topic for another time, as I'm getting up closer to the 40-minute mark here on this solo rant. But so I realized my data set was showing was doing nothing more than controlling my bias and decision making. I threw out everything that I believed to be true. So anything that I had read or didn't know, I just started from scratch. Here's what I know. Here's a framework that makes sense to me. I'm going to learn as much about these complex systems as humanly possible. Now, for performance, there is very little research done. So the constraints-led approach has some on, like, you know, tennis and field sports and whatnot, but it doesn't have a ton, like any, on strength sports. So I need to say, and there's not even a ton of research on a constraints-led approach anyways, as it's a relatively newer topic. But the crazy thing is there are so many parallels behind skill acquisition, fatigue, pain, performance. So all of these things have this biopsychosocial model behind them, and they require kind of the perfect storm of the same pieces mentally and physically to present themselves. So if that's the case and there's so much carryover, one, that's how I know I am less wrong. Or at least I have a framework that's going to guide my decision making in an appropriate manner. On top of that, it gives me things that I can read and learn from because of the carryover. So if you take an article on pain and it's talking about the biopsychosocial aspects of pain, if you cross out pain on those articles and you put performance, it makes sense. And it is literally what I see. And of course, we all have a bias, and that's my bias. And I'm going to confirm my bias when I'm reading it because I'm human and those things happen. But that's why we keep track of objective data. So the fact that I had in April and May 26 lifters compete, and we had 26 total PRs. The majority of those PRs were over 15 kilograms. Five of those were 50 kilograms or more. And there were another, I don't have the numbers in front of me, I want to say another four or five that were 30 kilos or more. Like, we put a lot of weight on these totals, and it wasn't just beginning lifters. These were lifters that have a lot of competition experience and a lot of competition experience with me. And yeah, we can talk about the novelty of a program, but we've been running this since October. So, you know, as I've gotten better at it, there just doesn't seem to be any slowing down. And yeah, there are periods of time in training where obviously it's not like every day they're coming in and hitting a PR. Like I said, there's spikes and valleys until it explodes out. And how long it takes to explode can be anywhere from a month, 2 months, 3 months, who knows. But it does, and it does, you know, and we may see a little small jump on a deadlift or something like, oh, my deadlift only went up 5 pounds, right? So it's in one of those, something I would have chalked up to as success. Nah, we're just still building strength in the background of that lift right now. But the squat went up 20 pounds. The bench went up 15 pounds. I had people put 50 pounds on their fucking bench. 50 pounds. And yeah, a couple of them gained weight, but, you know, 10 pounds of added mass leading to 50 pounds on a bench press in a few months. I'm not so sure that that's necessarily the reason that there was that much progress. And since we've competed, people are still hitting PRs. So, you know, I know that I do things a little bit differently, and it's well received by some. Some question it, and it's not well received by others, and I don't give a fuck. You still read my stuff, and you still listen to my podcast, still follow my posts and comment on them and talk about your friends, talk about me with all your friends. You're too worried about what we're doing and not worried enough about what you are. And I think lifting heavy, you know, like I said, it's a mindset. We compete every single day we go into the gym, but we're developing a training skill. You can't just lift heavy every day, because some days you just feel like shit and it's not there. But guess what? The body has plenty of feedback loops in there to control the process. So if it needs to rest, you're going to lift less weight that day. Little nagging things might pop up and you might decide, hey, I'm going to bypass some hard sets today and just move around. And I'll tell you, that happens very, very infrequently. Like, most of the time, we power through. And if the lifter's, you know, feeling like shit and they're kind of dragging, they've been dragging for a while, we just drop frequency. So instead of doing 4 days a week, let's do 3 days a week, and let's keep powering through. That extra day of rest tends to help a little bit. Like, we don't understand. We know fatigue exists, but we don't know how it affects performance or any of those other measures. So we're using general principles to kind of guide the process, but understanding that they're not that true once we narrow them down to the individual. And we just come into the gym and we train hard because that's what we know actually works. And mindset. Like, we do focus a lot on the mental aspects of training. You have to. It's hard to come into the gym 3 or 4 days a week and get after it and handle heavier weights in a lot of cases. So, like, when I'm recording this, the week that I am speaking right now, Alyssa's best squat going into this week was 325 pounds. She hit 345 pounds on a high bar wide stance squat. And then 36 hours later, 340 pounds on a slow concentric tempo squat. So that's a 20-pound PR that she's touched twice in a given in less than 2 days. So to be able to do that with that fast of a turnaround for somebody who used to be intimidated by heavier weights, like 2-3 weeks ago, she told me this is the first time I approached 3 plates that I wasn't scared. Developing the confidence under heavier weights is also a skill that is learned from practicing heavier weights. And it took a little bit of time, but now that she's got there, she's capable of doing it 36 hours apart. Most people would be like, oh, I lifted heavy the other day. I need a few days off. And the thing that is holding them back are those cultural beliefs that fatigue requires so much time to dissipate and that you need to super compensate and you can get injured and your CNS is fried and all of this other fucking bullshit that exists out there. If you're a coach and you're listening to this and you step back and you just observe what's happening, you forget everything that you know and you just observe what's happening and you think, where would I start if this information didn't exist? And you start building it out from there, keeping in the back of your mind what the general principles are and allowing them to guide that process. Well, I don't know what to do here. Progress seems to be stalling. All right, let's add more exposures. Maybe that's when volume's appropriate. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's just changing the exercise. Maybe you suck at just identifying where the weakness is on the exercise. And I'll tell you, as a coach, I'm still learning that part. That's not easy. And it requires a lot of attention and a lot of focus and, you know, it takes me a while, even though my, as the internet will call my lazy programs, it takes me a while to write these because I'm literally going through their videos to not only pick weights, but to help identify things that I may want to work on. And then how do I work on those within the lifts, allowing them to still lift heavy? And if somebody has confidence issues on a certain lift, let's say they get nervous once you put 300 pounds on a squat, how can I put them into positions while trying to train those inefficiencies while touching 300 pounds because we need to address the confidence aspect. It's not fucking easy. It's really easy to take a spreadsheet that does all the fucking math for you and pump out a little bit more volume this week than you did last week. I know because I did it for 3 years, 2.5, 3 years. And I have all the data to prove that it doesn't fucking do anything. So I'm going to end my rant here. You know, since I'm up over 45 minutes and my blood pressure is starting to go up. But I, you know, and I'm not going to end my rant here. I got one more. You know, it gets frustrating for me at times because I have to sit there and listen to everybody tell me how shitty our programming is and stuff when all our group is doing is getting stronger and you don't fucking pay me for coaching. You don't have to pay me for coaching. Chances are I don't want your mentally weak fucking crybaby attitude being with our group. It's fucking hard to be a member of this group because we're going against every cultural norm that people tend to even think of. So we have to have a strong relationship because they have to believe in me and believe in the group enough to trust that what we're doing is less wrong than what everybody else is doing. And they have to be able to identify what everybody else is saying as noise. And yeah, it makes it easy when there's over 50 people in the group doing it and we have extremely low injury rates and extremely high success rates. And I'm going to tell you right now, you cannot decrease injury risk while increasing performance. All you can do is make the best decisions possible in training on a day-to-day basis to try to do both. But increased exposure alone leads to an increase in injury risk. So, you know, if we're going to increase volume, that's literally what you're going to do. And when I think about it, if I'd rather get 1 to 2 hard sets to get that effort that I'm looking for, right? That also hits mindset. It hits confidence. It works on inefficiencies. That's, to me, extremely quality work. 1 to 2 hard sets, move on. Like when I was working with Shaco, there'd be days where I'd be doing 10 plus sets. So the effort would probably be similar towards the end, but now I'm getting way more exposures doing it. So just from a pure statistical standpoint, the risk of injury is higher doing it that way. Not because you took a heavy set. That's the fucking sport. Like, literally, the sport is lifting heavy. I just don't. And I know that there are very successful coaches out there and coaches that I respect a lot that do use these more volume measures. But this is me, how I got to where I am now. And the results that we are seeing as the group, you know, we'll see what happens. And I'm comfortable enough to be like, hey, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. We'll change things up again. That's what we've continued to do, is when I've seen issues, I've identified them. And this is even with myself, and made the appropriate changes. I do feel that at this current point in time, I'm literally onto something, because it tends to be working extremely well. And I gotta keep finding a way to change training a little bit, to, you know, the people who are with me longer, I gotta find more creative ways to work on those weaknesses. I can't just give them every time, you know, if they're pitching forward, I can't just give them high bar wide stance squats every single time. You know, and don't get me wrong, that, you know, as the total increases, the weight on those will increase, so they'll still be in there. But I got to find a way to manipulate training continuously to keep progress moving forward. And I think ultimately that is the most important thing in order for continued progress, because most people see progress after a short while and then they feel the need that they need to change coaches. Well, maybe it's because your coach thinks that they are, but they're not as flexible and adaptable as they need to be to deal with an open, complex system. You can follow along with our team. I write articles sometimes. I've been on other podcasts explaining this stuff. There's, if you go back into the old podcast, you can see where we came from and see where we are now. I'm done. You can follow me on Instagram, KWKN, our team, Precision Powerlifting Systems. Stay strong, Boston.